following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views of News Radio 830 KHVH, its staff, or management.
Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling a little shy, you can always email your questions to us, and we can answer those questions over the air in future weeks so everyone can get the benefit of the answers. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and you can also find us online at www.hawaiianeye.com. We also have radio shows, past radio shows on the website. If you want to listen to something or if you thought you missed something, you can come back in about a week and check out our radio show, which should be posted in the next next week. And we also have Twitter if you want to follow us or if you want to tweet us a question. It's twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. During the next hour here on the radio, we're going to discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. There's sometimes an eye quiz to test your IQ. And we'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. That's Dr. Stephen Ree and Dr. Nancy Lindblad are the other medical doctors. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. Now we're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service. So sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Now, I noticed today coming into the radio station that it really is a lovely day. It's a beautiful day, blue sky, sun shining, and it's already getting warm. And it's quite a contrast to the last few days where the morning was just a bit of a chill to it. So I think summertime is coming, and I think summertime is almost here. And so I think it's time to get out our message about wearing protective eyewear when you're out at the beach this summer. It's the weekend. Maybe people are heading out to the beach this weekend or heading out to do some outdoor activities. So don't forget your sunscreen for your skin, but don't forget your sunscreen for your eyes, which is also known as eye sunglasses, right? So if you're going outdoors and you're going to protect your skin from the sun, which you should be doing, you also want to protect your eyes from the sun. The ultraviolet light from the sun can have an effect on a number of structures on the eye itself and can cause a number of different conditions in the eyes. And so protecting your eyes from sunlight or from ultraviolet light is the best alternative to help prevent problems down the road with eye health. So people ask me, what kind of sunglasses should I get? Should I get designer sunglasses? Should I get fancy big lens sunglasses? Should I get little lens sunglasses? And so basically, you have to just use a little common sense. The first most important key to any good pair of sunglasses is that they block the ultraviolet or the UV light, because that's the light that does the harm to your eyes and to your skin, by the way. And so if we can block UV light, then that's going to be an advantage in the sunglasses. So you want to pick up sunglasses that say that they block both UVA and UVB light. Usually you want them to block 95% or more of UVA and UVB light. So sometimes you'll see it labeled that way. You'll go into Long's or Walmart or to a high-end glasses store and it'll say blocks 95% or 98% or 100% of UVA and UVB. So that's one thing to look at. The other thing that also tells you that it blocks UVA and UVB light is if it says on the little tag that's attached to the pair of glasses, if it says 400 blocking. 400 is the wavelength of light that is blocked. Higher wavelengths than that are blocked by sunglasses. And generally, this 400 nanometers wavelength of light is thought to be the beginning of the ultraviolet spectrum. And so if they block 400 and higher wavelength of light, then they're blocking out the ultraviolet light that would otherwise be hitting your eyes. So UV light blocking is important in sunglasses. The other thing depends on, the other things that are important about sunglasses depend on you and how you wear them and your comfort. I usually recommend a sunglass that has a little bit of a wraparound appearance to it so that it blocks light coming in not only from the front, but also from the side, blocks some of the sunlight and the UV light coming in from the side. There is good evidence that pterygium, which is a little growth on the surface of the eye related to sun damage on the surface, the effect of pterygium is intensified by sunlight reflecting or ultraviolet light reflecting off of the nose and onto the surface of the eye. And so if the light is coming in from the side, it can still hit your nose and bounce down onto the surface of the eye and cause damage to the surface. And so wearing glasses that protect from the sides a little bit as well are helpful. Also, you don't want to get too small or tiny a lens. I see sometimes, I've seen some of, particularly seems to be popular among the Japanese tourists, wear these really small little lenses, and they may be sunglasses, they may be tinted, and they may have ultraviolet blocking in them, but because they're so small, a lot of ultraviolet light still hits the surface of the eye. So they're looking through the glass, so their central vision is shielded a little bit from the sunglass, but as light bounces around and comes from bouncing off the water or the sand or coming from the sky directly, it may very well hit the surface of the eye and cause damage to the eye itself without the protection of sunglasses that wrap around a little bit. So sunglasses don't have to be designer. They don't have to be high-end. They don't have to cost you a lot of money. They just need to block the UV light, and they need to be fit your face sufficiently well that they block light coming in to hit your eye from the majority of directions. So if you put on a pair of sunglasses in the store to try it on, and of course you look in the mirror, but if you look through the sunglasses and you notice that you're seeing a lot of white light compared to the tinted light that's coming through the contact of the sunglasses, then that means that you're probably getting too much light around the edges of the sunglasses. And so that's something that you ought to watch out for when you're purchasing sunglasses. And so what types of problems do people get when they don't wear sunglasses, when they don't protect their eyes from the ultraviolet light? Well, the one that we see very commonly here in Hawaii is called pterygium. Pterygium is a growth on the surface of the eye. It usually causes, occurs on the inside corner of the eye, the nose side of the eye. And this seems to be related to light reflecting off of the nose onto the surface of the eye, but we don't know for sure. But since most people get these pterygiums on the nasal side of their eyes, that's where you should normally look for it. It looks red or pink, and you can see little blood vessels when you look closely, and it looks like a little cloud growing over the surface of the eye. And as it gets larger, it seems to cover more of the surface of the eye, and people look at it and say, oh my gosh, is that going to cover my whole eye and make me blind? And the thing about pterygium is that pterygia actually is the plural, pterygium and pterygia. It's one of those words spelled with a P, P-T-E-R, but you don't pronounce the P, so it's pterygium. And pterygium grows slowly for most people. It'll grow a little quicker when exposed to ultraviolet light or when the eye is dry or irritated a lot. But the growth of that pterygium can be caught at an early stage, and the pterygium can be removed. So if you are seeing this type of irritation on the eyes, the first step is usually to keep your eyes comfortable, well lubricated, and protected from the sunlight with ultraviolet blocking sunglasses. And then the second step, if it's continuing to grow or irritate or cause problems, is to go ahead and have it removed. And that can be done surgically with usually in the doctor's office or in a surgery center or hospital. And so when they're removed, usually that's great and it's fine, but once in a while they do come back. There are a number of techniques to reduce the chances that they're going to come back, and so you want to talk to your doctor about what they're going to do to help reduce the reoccurrence of your pterygium. And so that's something that you need to be aware of, is that there is that risk that will reoccur, and that there are some things that can be done at the time of surgery to reduce the risk of that, although we can't completely eliminate the chance that it'll come back. There is always that chance that it will come back. We can do things that will help to make it less likely that it'll come back. So something to bear in mind if you're interested in treating or fixing a pterygium. So protect your eyes from the UV light. Wear the sunglasses when you're outdoors. When you go to the beach, if you're surfing and you can't wear sunglasses when you're out there on the waves, the one option to reduce your UV light exposure to your eyes is to go surfing during the times when the UV light is a little bit lower, before about 10 in the morning and after about 3 in the afternoon. UV light tends to be a little bit less. So those are good times to go out and surf, that you're not going to be exposing your eyes and your skin to quite as much ultraviolet UV light. All right, we'll be right back with some eye news after this short break.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes, can you see me lost from paradise?
Hawaiian eyes, and this is the Hawaiian Eye Show, interestingly enough. So if you have a question that you'd like to ask us, 521-8383 is the number to call that you can reach us here at the Hawaiian Eye Show. In the meantime, we're going to talk about some of the eye news that I've encountered over the past week or two. And I see an article here about glaucoma patients. Now, glaucoma is a common condition as we get older. Glaucoma is a condition that also can cause a blinding eye disease, or it's a blinding, potentially blinding eye disease. It can cause blindness if not treated. And the treatment for glaucoma is an ongoing treatment. It's not a one-time treatment and you're done. And so people who have glaucoma end up usually using eye drops for an extended period of time. They usually have to use drops for day in and day out for years and years, often a lifetime. And so the fact that whether or not you're using the drops properly plays an important role in how effectively the glaucoma is being treated. Some people are able to effectively put in drops every day, and some people find it a big challenge. But the people who find it a challenge, it's good that they know, that they realize or recognize that it's a problem for them, but not everyone who has trouble putting in drops realizes that they have trouble putting in drops. And this is an interesting study that we found here over the past couple of weeks. It says 9 out of 10 glaucoma patients instill eye drops incorrectly. As investigators observed 70 glaucoma patients aged 35 to 70 years old administering eye drops. All patients had been self-administering at home for at least 6 months. When observed instilling one drop of artificial tears, only 8.5% could correctly squeeze one drop into the conjunctival sac without bottle tip contact. the rest squeezed more than one drop, spilled the drops, touched the tip to the globe or periocular tissue, closed their eyes, or did something else that prevented proper installation of the eye drops. So out of 70 patients, only 8.5% could correctly squeeze the drop into their eye. That's probably only about 5 out of 70 that could do that. So that's a kind of an eye-opening effect, if you'll pardon the pun, and the eye-opening news story. And it just goes to show that you want someone else probably to watch you putting drops in the eyes if you do put drops in your eyes regularly. And the two things you want to make sure are happening in whatever technique you're using for putting drops in the eyes is that you want to make sure that the drop is actually going into your eye. So that's important because otherwise it's not going to work. And you also want to make sure that the tip of the bottle or the tip of the dropper is not touching anything else. So it's not touching your eyes, your eyelashes, your eyeball, your lower lid. And so you want to make sure that the eyedropper bottle is far enough away from the eye that you're actually able to get it in without contaminating the tip of the dropper bottle. Because what happens is if you touch that tip of the bottle to stuff and that stuff has bacteria on it, germs of some type, those bacteria can actually grow or proliferate on the tip of the bottle, and then that can increase the risk that you'll develop an infection later from the use of the eye drops. So a technique that we commonly teach people for putting eye drops in the eyes, I'll go over it now. So you might want to take notes if you're a regular eye drop user. I always tell people, let gravity be your friend, let gravity help you. Don't try to keep your head upright and put a drop in your eye because that drop is not going to fall easily into your eyes. So if you lay down or lay your head way back so that it's almost horizontal, then that helps gravity to help you get the bottle, the medicine, the drop from the bottle into your eye. So if you're laying down and you hold the bottle directly above your eye so that you can see the tip of the bottle, not too close, because as I said, you don't want to touch it to anything. You know that even if you blink or close your eye at the last minute, that drop is still going to land close to your eye. So even if you opened your eye, you know, even if you dropped it on your eyelid and then you open your eye, it's still going to go into your eye, right? So if you're positioned so that gravity is going to help get that drop into your eye because you're lying down and you're holding the tip of the dropper bottle above your eye where you can see that it's directly above your eye because you're looking up at it, and then you drip it into your eye without getting too close. But you don't want to be too far away either. You don't want to be like a dive bomber, you know, hit or miss because you're way up above your eye. But you want to keep it some distance. And so what we usually recommend is use one hand on your face to pull down the lower eyelid and also to rest your other hand, which has the bottle, the dropper bottle in it, on top of the other hand. So if you can picture using one hand to pull down the lower lid and also have it sit or rest on your face, on your cheek, and then sit the other hand on top of that hand so that it's steadied and so that it's a little bit further away, then you can drip the bottle in, the drop into your eye, and gravity will help it to go into the eye. Now, sometimes people say, well, I think I'm getting the drop in, but I'm not sure. And so they put a drop in, but they can't feel it too well because maybe the drop has been sitting out and it's about the same temperature as room temperature. And here in Hawaii, that's fairly warm most of the time. So that bottle, that drop going into the eye, isn't too different a temperature than the surface of the eye itself. So you don't really feel the feeling of that drop going in because it's not a difference in temperature. So you may feel the wetness, but you may not. And so if you chill that medicine, if you put it in the refrigerator, then that makes the medicine cold so that when you put it in your eye, you can feel it hitting your eye because it's cold, right? So you feel that coldness of the medicine and you know that you've gotten it in your eye as a result. And so that's one way that we often recommend that people solve the issue of, well, did I get it in my eye or not? You can chill the medicine and that'll give you a kind of a feedback on whether you've gotten it in or not. So that's some advice about putting drops in your eyes. If you have questions about the eyes, give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call. We have open phone lines, and I'm happy to try to answer your questions and see if we can let you know anything about what's going on in your eyes. We have a news story here about Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's disease is a neurological problem. It affects the nervous system, causes people to have a little tremor and to become a little stiffer. And over time, it becomes progressively worse, and it can lead to serious difficulties in getting around and other things. People who have Parkinson's disease also have issues that affect the eyes. And we'll talk a little bit about those in a bit. But this article here is about what changes in the eyes might be an early warning sign for Parkinson's disease, might be something that can give us an indication that someone may be at risk to develop Parkinson's disease. It says here, using precise eye tracking technology, researchers found that ocular fixation instability in 112 patients with Parkinson's disease that they tested, compared with only 2 out of 60 healthy age-matched controls. So the lead story here is eye tremors may be an early indicator of Parkinson's disease. And it says ocular tremors may provide an early biomarker for diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, according to a new study. So they found that 112 patients with Parkinson's disease had ocular fixation instability, and only 2 out of 60 age-matched controls had the same thing. Said precise oculomotor testing could provide clinicians with a simple means to accurately diagnose Parkinson's disease with accuracy well exceeding that of clinical assessments, according to a Parkinson's researcher. He noted that testing for fine ocular instability is straightforward and can be routinely done, adding, "I do believe this could become a standard of care." In a telephone interview with Medscape Medical News, Andrew Sidoroff, MD, Associate Professor of Neurology at the Perelman School of Medicine and University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, who was not involved in the study, said he is impressed, however, by the data. People don't typically think of Parkinson's patients as having fixation impairment, meaning poor ability to look at something and track something when they look at it with their eyes. And the Parkinson's patients all had this abnormality. So there are a number of other issues that Parkinson's disease patients can get related to the eyes, and we'll talk about all of those in a few minutes. But let's go first to the phones. We've got Jane standing by in Honolulu. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I have one eye, I have cataracts. The other eye, I have a torn retina. So the other eye with the bad retina is pretty far gone. So I was thinking maybe I could save the eye with the cataracts. And I just wanted to know basically about, because I don't have any insurance right now, and I'll pay for it. How much are we talking just for simple cataract surgery? Or I don't know if it gets simple or elaborate or what.
Well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, there's no one straightforward answer to that, because it depends a little bit on whether you have the surgery done in a hospital or an outpatient surgery setting, whether you have, what the doctor's charges are, and so forth. I would guess that the fee, and I don't actually even know what our fee is for people who don't have insurance, but you can certainly call our office and find out, and you'll hear the number in a short while of our office. But I would guess that the fee would be somewhere in the range of $3,000 to $5,000 for a cataract removal without insurance, but that would depend on a number of factors. So you probably would want to call around a little bit to see what the options are. In our particular office, I know we do try to keep the costs reasonable because we have a surgery center, so we don't have to pay the added expense associated with a hospital, and we can still deliver the care safely and effectively. And we do hundreds of these every year, but we are located out in Wahiawa, which is a little bit farther away for you than you might like, but that's up to you. The thing about saving your eye, though, I just want to comment, is that cataract basically is a problem that can be fixed at any time. It's not like a retinal detachment, where if you have a detachment of the retina, it's an urgent problem that needs to be fixed immediately. If you have a cataract is a gradual progressive change in the vision, and if you're having difficulty with your vision, you should certainly consider having the cataract removed. But if you don't have it done today, and you wait 6 months or you wait a year, it may get a little bit worse, but it won't be permanent damage to the vision.
Okay. Is there such a thing as eye insurance, that you can get insurance just for the eyes? Because so far, I find you've got to get a comprehensive medical coverage plan, which that's something else. Is there such a thing as eye insurance?
No, not for that type of thing. I mean, eye surgery is just like surgery anywhere else on the body. It involves the same types of issues and the same types of expenses, and so it's covered by traditional health insurance. So if you have health insurance, how old are you now?
56.
Uh-huh. So you're not eligible for Medicare or...
I don't want any, but I've had this cataract since they found it when I was 17, but it has gotten to the point where I can't read now without a magnifying glass, and that's now my good eye.
Yeah.
The other one used to be my good eye, but that one, I don't even drive because my vision's so bad.
So you're fortunate enough then that you don't have other medical problems, so you've just done without
just
medical
my
insurance.
Eyes, that's it. Yeah. I'm very blessed, and well, the eyes are important, but I'm glad I don't have other problems, yes.
Well, call around. I mean, certainly if you call our office, we do have payment plans available and so forth. And so it's, you know, it's an investment in your future and in your vision. So I wish you well and hope that you're able to get that resolved.
Thank you very much. Have a good morning.
You too. Aloha.
Okay, bye.
We have Steve standing by on the lines. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Good morning, Dr. Tatora.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you questions regarding ultraviolet versus infrared.
Mm-hmm.
You started your show off this morning talking about outdoor sunglasses, and I was interested in the difference between standard clear polycarbonate lenses, tinted gray polycarbonate lenses versus polarized. I understand that all polycarbonates protect against ultraviolet.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what the profile of blockage of polycarbonates lenses is. I'm my primary focus is on medical care of the eyes, and so I usually leave the optical stuff up to the opticians. I know polycarbonate does offer certain forms of protection. The difference between the three things that you mentioned, the tint, the polarized lenses, and the standard lenses, doesn't have any difference as far as the ultraviolet transmission or infrared transmission for that matter, although infrared doesn't seem to damage the eyes as far as we know. But what it does do is it's just a matter of comfort. People who want less light getting to their eyes because the bright sun bothers them, like the tint. People who are in places where there's a lot of glare, like the polarized, because polarized helps to reduce the glare. So the difference in any lens, whether it's polycarbonate or any other type of lens, is just a matter of comfort for those particular issues.
So polycarbonate doesn't necessarily filter any higher volume of light than gray lenses.
I'm not sure. The difference between gray and polarized, there's no higher amount of light filtered, but I don't know the profile of polycarbonate versus other lenses. I know if it doesn't block the UV, then there's a UV coating available. If the lens does inherently block the UV, then you don't need to bother with the coating, but you'd have to talk to an optician who's familiar with those things to.
Yeah, I think I'll have to do that. I mean, the question really was, I'd like to try and prevent macular degeneration.
Right. As long as you have the UV blocking, the tint and the polarization are only, you know, Matt, your personal preference.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. All right, we're going to take a break for the news. When we get back, it'll be time to take more of your calls, so give us a call.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience, and they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio 830 KHVH.
It's 68 degrees, mostly sunny in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis. Here's what's happening. Forecasters say today could bring a series of life-threatening storms throughout the nation's midsection, and the worst of it could come this afternoon. Tornado sirens already are blaring across Oklahoma City. At least three tornadoes were reported west and north of the city, but no injuries have been reported. The UN Security Council is giving the go-ahead for the first wave of UN military observers to be sent to Syria to monitor the fragile ceasefire between government troops and opposition fighters. The University of Hawaii Manoa campus sent out three alerts to students yesterday between noon and 1:30 p.m. and two elementary schools in the area were on lockdown as police and campus security searched for a student they believed was distraught and possibly armed. The 20-year-old man was located near Diamond Head just after 2:30 p.m. and taken to the hospital for evaluation. No weapon was recovered. Traffic will be congested around the Stan Sheriff Center today and tomorrow when the Dalai Lama presents two talks on peace. The spiritual Tibetan leader arrived yesterday and was greeted by students from Kamehameha schools with chants and hula. His trip is hosted by the Hawaii Community Foundation. The Department of Education wants to standardize bell schedules internally to address big differences in the length of the school day among campuses, but bell schedules must be approved by teachers at each school with a two-thirds vote, and the teachers' union is opposed to the bell schedule. Island weather, a high surf advisory is in effect for north and west shores beginning at noon. Today, widespread haze, mostly sunny, high in the 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low near 71, and tomorrow, mostly sunny, currently in Honolulu, 68. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the Neighbor Islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears.
All right, welcome back. And here we are in the second half of the Hawaiian Eye Show. So if you have a question, now's a good time to call. 521-8383 is the number to call if you're calling from here on Oahu. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, there is a toll-free number to call. You can write that one down. It's 888-565-8383. That's 888-565-8383. Here from Oahu, 521-8383. And we can certainly try to answer your calls. We were talking a little bit about Parkinson's disease and how it might affect the eyes. And it turns out that according to a new study, there are some issues with the patients who have Parkinson's disease being able to fixate or focus on objects. And this may actually turn out to be a cause of reduced vision in Parkinson's patients, because if you can't get your eyes to stay on a certain subject, you're not going to see it as clearly. If there's a little tremor, if there's a little back and forth movement of the eyes, and they're not fixating cleanly on a particular object, then you're not going to get as sharp or clear vision of that object. So the other thing that we notice a lot in people with Parkinson's disease is that they don't blink as often. And this is part of an overall motor slowing down. They get stiffer joints. They move more slowly. Their skin and their face, the expressions of their face, becomes more slack because the muscles that move the muscles that cause facial expression are somewhat weaker. And so the people with Parkinson's disease don't blink as often also. And this poor blink reflex results in drying of the surface of the eyes. We depend on blinking our eyes to spread moisture over the surface of the eye. And the blink is a normal part of the physiology of how the eyes work. And with that normal blinking action, we not only spread moisture over the surface of the eyes, but also create a normal, healthy tear film by spreading the tears over the eyes and also allowing the tears to drain out of the tear drain, which is on the inside corner of the eye. So as you blink, it kind of pushes the tear film toward the inner corner of the eyelid, and that allows the tears to drain. So when you don't blink as often, or when you blink less, the surface of the eye tends to dry more, and the moisture layer, the tear film, tends to evaporate more quickly. And this is something that can have an impact on the vision. And we see this also in people who don't have Parkinson's disease, but spend a lot of time staring at a computer or staring at a book or staring at a magazine or a newspaper, and they don't blink their eyes as often because they're staring at something, and the surface of the eye tends to dry. Moisture evaporates from the surface of the eye. And this is a cause or a something that results in symptoms associated with dryness of the surface of the eyes, or what we call dry eye syndrome. So people who have poorer blink or reduced blink or are blinking less because they're looking at something tend to have a greater propensity for the surface of the eye to dry, and thus more of this dry eye symptoms associated with it. All right, let's see. We have a news story here about some of the drugs that are used to treat retinal diseases. We found increasingly that a class of drugs known as anti-VEGF inhibitors or anti-vascular endothelial growth factor agents. These agents prevent the growth of abnormal new blood vessels in the eye, which can, in the eye, cause damage to the eyes and to the vision under certain circumstances, conditions like macular degeneration, and perhaps diabetic retinopathy, which is a similar condition in some ways to macular degeneration, in that there are abnormal blood vessels forming in diabetic retinopathy. So the same studies that showed that these types of agents injected into the eye may be useful in the treatment of macular degeneration, these same treatments suggest, the same studies suggest that maybe we could try this with other types of conditions that that affect the eye similarly, and diabetes is one of those types of symptoms. So basically a study was done where they used one of these agents, which is called bevacizumab, and it's also known as Avastin. And it says bevacizumab beats laser therapy in macular edema trial. So the 2-year randomized control trial suggests that bevacizumab or Avastin is more effective than laser treatment in patients with diabetic macular edema. So a doctor in London, the London Institute of Ophthalmology, result of this trial. So it says that the new article updates previously reported 1-year follow-up data from the same trial and provides further validation for an approach that many clinicians are already taking. So many people are using bevacizumab, even though this is the only true study out there that shows any benefits, according to Dr. Frank, professor of ophthalmology at the Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. He said, I think it's an important study, though it's not yet definitive because there were only 80 patients and you'd usually like to have hundreds. This macular laser therapy had been the mainstay of treatment for clinically significant diabetic macular edema since the 1980s. The procedure reduces the risk for moderate vision loss, and visual acuity improves a little bit in less than 3% of patients. So the macular edema from diabetes may be causing the vision to be reduced, and it may get worse over time. Laser stabilizes the problem, but usually doesn't improve the problem. It says here, more recently, preliminary evidence has emerged that intravitreal injections, so injecting it directly into the eye, of anti-vascular endothelial growth factor, or anti-VEGF drugs, are more effective. So they had several drugs being used for this purpose currently in clinical practice. To verify that bevacizumab is better than laser treatment, the researchers enlisted 80 patients with center-involving clinically significant macular edema. The patients had their vision tested, and they found swelling on certain tests in the back of the eye to make sure that they were all having the same type of problem. And then they assigned the patients to receive either the intravitreal injections or the laser treatment. The people receiving laser treatment received a standard type of laser treatment, and than the people who received the injection, received an injection at baseline and again at 6 weeks and 12 weeks. And then they were reviewed at 18 weeks and then every 6 weeks afterwards until week 102 for the need for more injections. Okay. So if the, then they, their conclusions were that they actually found a little benefit or improved benefit with the injectable drug than with the laser treatment. So it says, overall, the patients receiving bevacizumab fared better than the patients receiving laser therapy. The mean visual acuity at 24 months in the bevacizumab group was better than the laser group. Okay, so they gained, the bevacizumab patients or the injection patients gained some vision, whereas the laser patients were stable or slightly lost vision over time. So that's pretty convincing information. Now, of course, it is a relatively small group of patients, so there are errors that could be introduced as a result. So it does need to be looked at or studied more significantly. So one of the doctors said he was looking forward to further trials that would compare the two drug therapies head-to-head, so a couple of different types of medications that can be used for this, and so comparing the drugs head-to-head versus laser, you know, versus medicine. So that's interesting that now the role of these types of agents has been expanding in clinical practice, but now we have some scientific evidence to support that these patients actually do a little bit better and with the injections versus the traditional laser treatment. So something good to bear in mind. All right, let's take a short break. When we get back, we'll do some more eye news. And if you have a call, now's a perfect time to give us a call.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
A brown-eyed girl.
All right, welcome back, everyone, and here we are in the last segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. So if you do have something that you'd like to ask us about, now's a perfect time to call. 521-8383 is the number to call. We've been talking about a number of different things related to the eyes today. One of the things that did come up during the week was information about contact lenses, and there are a lot of people out there who wear contact lenses, despite the fact that it's now possible to surgically correct your eyes. So there are probably people who have had LASIK, who used to wear contact lenses that don't anymore, but contact lenses are still a big item. There are quite a few people who wear contact lenses, so knowing about them and learning about them is useful. So there are a few things that I like to talk about when it comes to contact lenses. First of all, people ask, what age should I start my children in contact lenses? At what point should they start? How old should they be? Should they be 10? Should they be 15? Should they be 20? So my usual response is that for kids, the important thing about contact lenses is being responsible enough to use them correctly. Now, the contact lenses are different than eyeglasses. You know, eyeglasses correct your vision, contact lenses correct your vision, but contact lenses sit on the surface of your eye, so they're a higher possibility to introduce infection and to cause other problems because they're right there on the surface of the eye. So the contact lens use should come when the person who's using them is responsible enough to take care of their eyes properly. And what that means is you have to make sure that before you handle the contact lenses, you wash your hands because you want to make sure that it's clean and that you're not introducing additional sources of infection into the eye. If you are wearing contact lenses and you don't take them out regularly, usually it's recommended to take them out every night and disinfect them, then that increases the risk of infection and problems as well. So kids need to be responsible enough to remember to take out their contact lenses and not fall asleep in them by mistake. And then, you know, in the morning, their eyes are all sore and stuck shut because they slept in their contact lenses. You know, some people can get away with sleeping in contact lenses, some can't, but it's really not that safe to do that on a consistent basis. So even if you have contact lenses designed for extended wear, I usually recommend taking them out and disinfecting them every night. If you want to take them out, disinfect them, then put them back in again, you can do that. But disinfection is an important part of the use of contact lenses. So you want to make sure the kids are responsible enough to do that. Let's go to the phones. We've got Charlie standing by in Kauai. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I have a couple of questions relating to wrinkled retina.
Uh-huh.
That's what they tell me I have. I started seeing lines as wavy lines, and then I started seeing things double. And after about 7 years, they told me it was stable and I wasn't in any danger of needing, say, surgery. So the first question is it reasonable that those things become stable after several years?
Let me ask you a couple other quick questions first. Is this just in one eye?
Just in one eye, yes.
Okay, and so you notice that distortion when you look out of the one eye, but the other eye is fine?
That's right. Yes, the one eye is nice and clear, and the other one, if I look at the thin line, it droops down to the right, and it kind of like ocean waves, you know, wavy.
Okay.
And also, it pulls the image toward me, so I see double. The image is like 10% closer and maybe 10% lower. So on large objects like buildings and cars, I see fine. But on small objects like golf balls, ping pong balls, and tennis balls, I see double.
And is this something that has changed at all over the past several years, or it's been pretty much the same?
It over the first several years, like 5 years, I could almost detect. I could tell you how much it was changing each year. And now it seems to be a little stable. I'm sorry, it seems to be stable. It's changing, if at all, very slightly. And my surgeon up on the mainland said that I don't have to come and see her anymore. I can just go to my regular ophthalmologist. I used to see one and then the other every 6 months.
Uh-huh. And have you had surgery on this, or you just were evaluated?
No. Okay. I can see 20/25 out of that eye with glasses correction.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, my experience with these types of things, so the wrinkling is caused by a little pulling of the vitreous gel that fills the inside of the eye. That vitreous gel will sometimes tug on the retina a little bit and cause it to wrinkle or become slightly irregular. And the same way that when you are looking at a movie being projected on a movie screen, for example, you see a nice clear image if the movie screen is flat, but if that movie screen were slightly wavy or distorted or irregular, you'd see a distortion of the image, of the fine details of the image. And so you see the same thing when your retina is distorted, as yours is, where there's a little wrinkling there so that you don't get a perfectly clear image, you get a slightly distorted image. Now, as long as that distortion is minor, usually it's not treated with surgery, as your surgeon told you, and the likelihood for it to change, I don't know really what the odds are, but my guess is that if it's been stable for several years, it's not likely to change too much. So I don't know, you know, the latest studies and so forth on whether these things do change again down the road, but my understanding is if the vitreous gel is no longer pulling on the back of the eye, so if you've had what we call a posterior vitreous detachment, which the doctors could probably tell you if you have or haven't had that, then it's very unlikely that it'll change significantly over time. You know, anything can happen, but the likelihood is it's going to stay about the same. So whatever vision you're having now and changes you're having now, you should probably stay about the same. Now, you can kind of monitor that by looking at things like that grid. You probably have that Amsler grid that you can look at. And that helps to monitor whether there's changes in the central vision. So there are tools for monitoring that. But if it's staying constant, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
What about the chances of getting it in the other eye, given that I have it in one eye already?
Well, that's going to also depend on whether the vitreous gel is still attached to the back of the eye or whether it's pulled free. If it's still attached, there's still a possibility that it could cause wrinkling of the macula. But if it's detached, most people think that that gel is no longer attached to the retina, that it is not likely to cause that type of problem after that. Although, you know, there are different ways that it may be caused, but that's the most common one. So so your doctor might be able to tell you whether or not your vitreous is detached from the retina on that side. And if so, that significantly reduces your chance of having that type of problem.
And I have a third question. These eye exercises that people promote that can reduce double vision, is that just internet hype, or do these exercises actually help you to strengthen the muscles in a certain and pull the two images together?
Well, for the most part, I would say that it's just internet hype, but there are certain conditions in which the double vision can be addressed with eye exercises, and that's when the two eyes are focusing differently. Now, your problem is different because you have one eye where the vision is distorted. It's not that the two eyes aren't working properly together. It's just one eye that the vision is distorted. So I don't see that this type of exercise would help with the type of double that you're experiencing.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All right, so double vision, that's an interesting subject. We'll have to talk about that another day, but there are a couple of different causes of double vision. But the most common cause of double vision is that the two eyes are not aligning properly and they're not working together properly. Under certain circumstances, eye exercises may help to bring the focus of the eyes together. You can practice focusing the eyes together because they have a tendency to drift apart. And if you do that, if you practice focusing them together, sometimes you can improve the symptoms of double vision. But for the most part, all these eye exercises to try to improve your vision or see better or control, you know, double or whatever it is, usually those are not really very helpful. And particularly the ones that claim to allow you to actually see better. If I wear glasses now, I've been doing these eye exercises and now I don't need glasses anymore. That's usually a crock. That's usually something that people tell me, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm seeing better already. It's great. I have this great success story. And they do it for a little while. Then they come back and they want glasses again anyway because it's not working as well as they thought it would. So I've never seen that really work terribly successfully. All right, we've been here for an hour now talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank MJ for helping out here in the studio, and thanks to all you listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your email. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us, and if you learned something new, you can always listen again next week, or you can listen to our podcasts or our archived shows at hawaiianeye.com. So go to the website, hawaiianeye.com, and you can also leave us an email, eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/hawaiianeyecenter, or on Twitter, I'm at Dr. Tortora, DrTortora. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with offices in central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. And we're there to serve you on a daily basis. Thank you so much for listening. Hope to hear from you or see you again next week. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Glenn Beck.
Sending you a message.
Weekdays at 4.
It's all going to be good.
KHVH Honolulu.
I'm here.
Hawaii's home for Fox News.